Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 14th, 2005. Today's session is entitled Francis Removed His Shoes, Part 2, St. Francis the Shoe Remover. Presented by Dan Erlander, ID number ERD-2005-07.
You can turn the machinery on. We're beginning the second session of The Life of St. Francis. And my name is Dan Erlander from Whidbey Island. So welcome to the second session. And a few, again, I have a number of books you might want to look at. And this one and then the novel there, the fat one, are still available. And these might be coming in by the end of the week. So, and this was the earliest portrait of Francis about 10 years after he died and I found out it's Cynibeau. Is that familiar artist? Did I pronounce it right? Cynibeau. And okay. And then we left Francis last time. One thing I like to begin with is we can do every time in between. You can give me little suggestions for this first part. It's called correcting things I said wrong last time. And one of them is the prayer of St. Francis, which mentioned last time. It came from the 1800s. It was first published in kind of a private paper, and then this is in the U.S., and then a Roman Catholic paper saw it and published it in that paper, and then another paper found it and published it, and then that third paper named it the Prayer of St. Francis. So we have no idea who the author was, but then this came out during the First World War. And it was part of this sense of weariness over the war that this saying of St. Francis, or this prayer of St. Francis, really became popularized and used in so many ways. And since that time has been a prayer on so many people's and congregations and communities' prayer. So that's... And I made another mistake, but I forgot it. Now, we are moving. We left off last time with after Francis had taken his clothes off, Bishop Guido puts his cloak on, gives Francis a robe to wear, which is temporary, and then he goes out. I should have more trees up that way, up in the upper right-hand side, more trees up there. There's woods. And he went running through the woods and singing and praising, and felt all like the feeling the burdens of life have been removed. Which the sadness of it is goodbye to his father. And that question came up last time, if he ever met his father again. And the only one we know is that once he was walking through town and his father was moved over to the other side of the road and scowled at him as he went by. And then because of his reputation with beggars was increasing, a beggar came up right after that and then blessed Francis to kind of undo the curse. So it's very sad that, as far as we know, he had no other communication with his parents till that after that time. Okay. Okay, I'm ready. This is right after now leaving the bishop's the cathedral where the bishop was and where the bishop had put the cloak on to Francis. I have to apologize here. I'm having trouble where my starting place is. Here it is. This is, and also the reminder that that this is where then Francis back at the cathedral with the bishop says, I have the complete quote here, I have called Peter Bernardone, my father. I give him back the money and all the clothes I have from him, throws them on the ground, and then says, my father is no longer Pietro Bernardone, but our Father who art in heaven. And when he went off singing, he sang in French. He loved French and sang ballad. He said, sang some of the ballads that he had learned from the troubadours in his youth. So, but now the question is, what does he do? First of all, he continues what he had already started, and that it was working for the leprosarium and washing and cleaning the wounds of the lepers. And then back to San Damiano, which is right below St. Georgia there. And this was a little church, broken down, had an old priest that lived inside the church. And this is where he saw the cross that you see right here. That's, it's called the San Damiano cross. And on the original, which is still in Assisi, the head of Christ is structured so it's facing down. And it's before this cross that he heard the voice inside of himself, build my church, for it is falling into ruins. And so that's why now his work is answering this, the voice that he heard from this cross, and that's why he's finding stones and more stones and rebuilding the church. Now, he still doesn't have a calling of what will he do. What will he do? And that happens on the festival day of Saint Matthias, in 1208. And on this day, there's mass in the church for the festival day, and it was at the church of San Damiano, the little chapel. And the text for that day was Matthew 10, which was read, and then the priest gave a homily on that text. And when Francis heard the words of this text from Matthew 10, it was, the call.
These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Go nowhere among the Gentiles, and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You received without payment, give without payment. Take no gold or silver or copper in your belts, no bag for your journey or two tunics or sandals or a staff, for laborers deserve their food.
And it's just this, aha, you know, this is the call for what I will do in life, is to live as closely as I can to Matthew 10, which includes taking off his sandals. Because in the text there, Jesus says to the disciples to take no shoes or no sandals on their feet, only one cloak, and then no money belt, no purse, and then to go out and preach the gospel and call people to repent, and then heal the sick, raise the dead, heal the sick, cleanse lepers, and then the joy that he has now that this will be my life to model for, as the book by Cunningham, the title is Performing the Gospel Life. He is going to spend his lifetime performing the life that Jesus taught to his disciples, and to do it literally. So, and his saying at the end of that, he ran up to the priest and asked to hear more about this text, which priests were not educated at all, most of them at that time, so I think the priest probably had said about all he knew in the sermon, and was very kind of, what is this? And then he wanted to know all about this. And then he goes forth from that church. And these words are the memory of that. This is what I want. This is what I seek. This is what I long to do with all my heart. And he moves out from there and begins a saying that he will say the rest of his life every time he meets someone, and his followers would do the same. And now there's thousands of plaques in the gift shops of Assisi that say the same. And that is just to say to everyone, peace and good. I wish you peace and I wish you good. He becomes God's troubadour, crying wherever he goes, the kingdom of God is near. And he brings back his singing voice again that he'd learned from the French troubadours that would come through Assisi. And people were surprised by this preacher that stopped at places to preach to people. And what they were most surprised about was that Francis is a sunny prophet, announcing redemption for sinners, announcing joy to sad hearts, because their experience at this time, there are many independent preachers running around in this time when the church was maybe at a period of its greatest corruption, wealth, power, and corruption in history. And most of the prophets were, and I overuse this word sometimes, very crabby. And here comes this prophet just dancing into a little town. And then people gather around and they listen, and his message is one of joy and a plea with them to turn around and follow the way of Jesus. So now, a little background on the next part. This was a period in history in towns like Assisi and the Italian peninsula where there was very much an emptiness and a hunger, especially among young people, because they had two things to give worth to their life, and that was one, to figure out some way to be rich, and number two is to go to war and find glory in battle, and it just wasn't reaching them anymore. The draft recruiting agencies were way behind in their recruitment. That's a little contemporary way of saying it. But this was this was the way he came across to people who had heard only very grumpy preachers. So other young people now begin to listen to hear him, and it includes young people that grew up with him in Assisi, knew him in school, knew him when he was the king of the parties in Assisi, and feeling and sensing the emptiness in their own hearts. There's first one, then two, then three that join him at the little church in San Damiano, join him there and start helping him with his stones and bricks and also begin to go out to preach. And a typical sermon of Francis that we have from history is, the peace of God be with you, turn your hearts to God, reform your lives with prayer and simplicity and concern for the poor, and do not follow the ways of the rich and the content. And then surrounding these words with the message of God's love. Now, these are some of the first followers, to give you a little idea. And in Franciscan circles, these are as famous as the 12 disciples. Bernardo, a very rich merchant and very important in Assisi. Pietro, a jurist and an ecclesiastical church lawyer. Sylvester, a priest. Giles, a farmer and a peasant, uneducated and illiterate. Angelo, a former knight. And these are the first now, and they're soon followed by Masio, very proud man. He needed a lot of help. Angelo, the former knight that I already mentioned, who had to learn pacifism, and it was a slow learning process. Brother Juniper was the comedian of the first group, and his reputation of comedy has carried all the way to our newspapers today with the little cartoon of Brother Juniper. Is he still in newspapers, or was that just years ago? Years ago? Rufino. Now, notice the diversity, everything from the wealthy to the soldier to the knight to the farmer. And I almost forgot, one of them where I forgot John the Simple, who was a peasant farmer. And he was totally illiterate, and he asked one of the other brothers, what do I do? And they said, just watch Francis, and whatever Francis does, you do. And so Francis had tried his patience, which he had committed himself to in his conversion, because like when they're eating, every time he took a morsel and lifted it up to his mouth, then Brother Giles would take a morsel and lift it up. Every time Francis scratched, Giles would scratch. And this was a test of his patience, you know. And you can go on and on with that. And he was also the first to die, became very, very sick, and died at age 18. That's the sum of it. Now, they go out with ragged clothes, in poverty, and asking for nothing, but begging and giving everything they beg for to the poor. And then they go and get temporary work to make enough to feed themselves, trusting that God will supply all of our needs, just as God supplies all of the animals. At first, most people think they are fanatics and fools, and people insult them. And then when the people are insulting them, they are blessing the people. And then they continue to help in the leprosarium. They continue to beg from the rich to give to the poor. Again, Francis called this the law of reciprocal containers. And then he explained it, take it from where it is and put it where it isn't. That's economics, Franciscan 101. Okay, now, but people begin to listen because there's something so joyful and so authentic especially when somebody will rough them up, which they did, and that they would just return with forgiveness and no fighting back and no seeking any kind of revenge. Now, as they're living together, Bishop Guido, the Bishop of Assisi, becomes worried about them because they need to be more practical. Now, this is a theme that will run all the way through the life of Francis. You must be more practical. You must be more practical. And so he suggests that they first gather some arms because there's a lot of robbers around. That they use lawyers if they have disputes. No. And then Francis said that is harmful for the loving of God and loving the neighbor. And the bishop made no reply, and commentators have said that for him to make them do this would be, in essence, to say that the gospel is wrong. And the bishop could not do that. The summer and fall of 1208 we'd call it a time of spiritual formation, where Francis and the brothers teach each other, and Francis being their main teacher. And then this was a time of dreaming, and it was there that they dreamed that someday we will have brothers who will go all over the world with the gospel. The report is that they could hear the footsteps of those in their order who would spread the gospel all over the world. Then Francis, following Jesus as literally he does, begins to send them out two by two to preach in the villages. And he has them, most of them were not trained at all, so he had them memorize a sermon and give them speech lessons. And then when they were sometimes misunderstood and they had mud thrown at them, dragged, disrobed, they learned from Francis, we never resist. We never resist. It was also this time that that Francis experienced the forgiveness of sins from his youth, and a burden that somehow the sins of his youth he had to make up to God. The gospel came to Francis of the total and complete forgiveness of all of his sins. Now the brothers with these followers had a problem. There was a group that was very, very strong in Italy and up into Europe at that time, and they were called the Cathari. And this was a Gnostic sect, and if you read some of the Gnostic Gospels that have been made famous by the Da Vinci Code, you will find it's very similar to what this Cathari, did I say that right? Cathari group was preaching and getting disciples. And, well, we'll have a review of to the staff people that have to leave. I'm sorry. So we go to 7:15, right? Okay. There is the good God, and then there is the evil God. And then man it says here, is their common work. Since human soul, their soul to God and his body to Satan. So your soul was created by God, your body was created by Satan. And then Christ's body was only an appearance. Jesus assumed human form merely to incite us to revolt against Satan and against the Roman Catholic Church. He is the devil's representative on this earth. And then to invite to belong to the true church of the Cathari. From just hearing that little, do you have any sense that they might get in trouble at this time when the church was the most powerful militarily and also spiritually control over people? That the answer was very simple. You kill the Cathari until all are dead. Now, the danger that Francis and his group realized is that they could be mixed up with the Cathari, and they wouldn't have time to explain as the soldiers of the church would come in with their slaying of heretics. So this is what they do. Francis has this inspiration. We will walk to Rome, and then we will go to Pope Leo III, probably the most powerful pope in the history of the Roman Catholic Church. And we will go and we will present to him the very simple principles that we learned from Matthew 10. And then we will have him approve our order. So we will be an order then like the Dominicans and the Benedictines. You follow? Mm-hmm. Follow that? So so now you have to picture it's a Cathari, it's a church at its most corrupt time in history, riddled with scandal and immorality, with priests mainly who are no more moral than the typical layperson. This is a situation, so this is the excitement as they dance, this motley group of people dressed in the tunic of a peasant with no shoes on and dirty from the road, but they sing on their way to Rome because they were so sure that if you're Pope, you would be spiritually sensitive and will approve their order. And so the advantage they have is that Guido, the bishop, is a friend of a cardinal called at that time Cardinal John of St. Paul. And then Cardinal John of St. Paul is close to the Pope. And so this is how things work in the Vatican. So because of this, and all through his life, Francis is very politically savvy. So this is probably the first example. So they get to Rome, and then because of their connections now, they have an audience with the Pope. And if you can imagine, but on one of the walls in Assisi is a picture of this meeting. And some have said this is the greatest artistic example in Christian history of the difference between the theology of the cross and the theology of glory. You get it? So they have an opening, and then the Pope dismisses them until the next day after their... And the report is the first thing the Pope says to them is, "You look like you've been in a pig pen. This is not a real positive beginning." And then how the legends developed. So the legend developed is that the Pope said, "Why don't you go and feed some pigs?" And Francis, being a literalist, they found a pig pen in Rome. And then they came back with pig manure all over them. And Francis bows before the Pope saying, "I have followed your command. We have been with the pigs." So, but that's probably a legend. But I think it's fun. Now, here's what happened. At this second meeting, almost unanimous, the cardinal said, "We cannot approve this order because it is unrealistic." And Pope Leo III agreed with them. But then the cardinal that was a friend of Bishop Guido, and this is beautiful because it shows in these times of power and corruption, there is still one person that understands or gets it. And he stands up before the Pope and before the cardinals and say, if we deny this man permission for this order, are we not in essence saying that the gospel can never be lived? And his appeal then touched the hearts of the cardinals and the Pope. And so the Pope then gave them the approval of the order. And there's another story that it helped a little, that night the Pope had a dream of the entire gigantic church falling over on its side, and it was being held up by one little monk. So I don't know if that's a legend or not, but if it's happened, it was probably part of the influence of making this decision. Now, I want to stop at about, we go to 7:15? I want to stop a little after 7 so we can just talk about what we've heard. Now, when they're on their way back to Assisi, they are dancing with joy because their order has been approved. They are now free to preach the gospel in the cities and towns of Italy. But then this is my guess. I made this up. The fact is true, but my story is fun. But right halfway to Assisi, they stop, and one of them is very, very serious and says to the others, did anybody get a paper from the Pope that guarantees the Pope's promise? And they all look around. I didn't. And they all look at Francis, oh, I forgot. Because every order that was ever had a written. Then they decide, the Pope gave his word, so we will trust him. And then they continue dancing on their way back to Assisi with the verbal approval of their rule. Now they settle at what's called Rivo Torto. I forgot to write it here. Rivo Torto. And they had on Rivo, this means crooked river. And it was a beautiful old spot with trees, pine trees. And on this, there was two little buildings that were each open, and then the inside was open, and they worshiped in between the two buildings, had their hours, and then they slept. They slept in the little sheds on either side, and they were so cramped in that space that Francis had to write their names on the ceiling so they could look up at night and see if they were in the right place. So that's Rivo Torto, and these were the golden days of the Franciscan order, where they were together with so much joy, so much sense of calling, of following Jesus, of worshiping together, and then fanning out during the day to work in fields, to beg, to give to the poor and the hungry, to go to the leprosarium, and then to go from town to town preaching the gospel. These were the golden days. It's before there were any big arguments. These are the days they would remember. And the spirit of Francis flourishes now during this time. And because of the joy that they share, now more and more are attracted. So it's growing, and these little huts are bursting at the seams. And then their problem is solved, is that a unemployed peasant comes, and when they're not there, they come back, and he's moved into the huts and has set up his little farm area there. And so the other brothers, are telling Francis, now there's 12 of us, it's time to kick him out. And this was the rule from Jesus that Francis heard, one never resists. And that's as it is written in Matthew, one never resists one. So they simply, under Francis' leadership, now just leave so this dear man can have his farm. Does that go against anything American in you? So then they move up to San Damiano, and then we'll pick up the story of San Damiano when we get to Deer Clare. So, I'll have time to share about Clare. Oh, I want to tell a story. This is a story about Angelo, my brother Angelo, who was a tough soldier. And Angelo, the whole thing of nonviolence, he took a while for him to get it. And this is one incident when they were together overnight, they had a hut. It might have been Riva Torto, and he was the only one there. And a group of robbers came, and they could find no one on the highway that day to rob, so they decided to rob the brothers. And there were two of them. And Angela was so tough, he just told them off, shook them, kicked them out, and told them to never come again. Mm-hmm. And then Francis and some of the other brothers come back. And Francis hears about this because Angelo is kind of proud of this. And Francis scolds him and says and asks him to go over hill and dale until he finds the two of them and bring them back to be guests in our hut. While he's out looking, Francis goes to town and buys good wine and bread and other food items. And then Angelo finally comes back with them, and they have a great feast of welcome to those who were denied hospitality. Mm-hmm. And both of them became brothers and lived the rest of their lives in the movement of the Little Brothers. Okay, I'm going to do Clare, and if I don't finish Clare, we'll... This is Clare and Francis, and it is right that they should be together on this, because here are a spiritual friendship. Maybe there has never in history been a closer one of two people of the Spirit than Francis and Clare. Now, if you see the movie Brother, Son, Sister, Moon, Clare and Francis are the same age, and they're joyfully running around the fields and the flowers of Assisi as teenagers. And it's really neat. So beautiful, beautiful people. Well, Francis was 12 years older than Clare. But Clare was from her childhood, was a very sensitive spiritually and in prayer, and so was her mother, and so was her sister. They were unusual in that kind of sensitivity. So when Clare comes to marriageable age, Francis, by this time, has been asked to preach in Assisi every Sunday. And the church is packed where Francis preached. I mean, I wish there was a recording of one of his sermons. And then, so she starts coming every Sunday to hear his sermon. And she catches the spirit of what Francis caught in the church on the day of St. Matthias. And she longs to be part of this movement, but she's a woman. So they get acquainted with each other because of her coming every Sunday and every Sunday. And they become friends. But Francis is very careful that there never would be even an insinuation of anything romantic between them. They become soulmates. Now, the family of Claire is very wealthy, and what marriage was in that day among the wealthy people was parents and a woman's, the parents of the man and the parents of the woman find a good business arrangement in a certain marriage. So they have chosen the man for Claire, and there is no way to get out of this. And she dreams of spending her life, like Francis, in prayer and service to the poor. And again, this is where Francis was savvy. He helped her and her cousin plan an escape from the house. And they, the escape is on Palm Sunday of 1212. And Claire and her cousin quietly sneak out of the house that night. And then all of the arrangements have been made that they will go to Portiuncula, St. Mary's Church down here. And then, I hope I'm right on this, I get these mixed up. And then there Francis and some of the brothers will meet them. And so they come, and it is successful. And there at the altar in the church, Francis takes a knife and cuts off all of Claire's hair. Which was a sign now that she is dedicated to God. And all of the reports was that she was the most beautiful woman with the most beautiful hair. And then the next step they have to get her in protection and hiding before. And her uncle forms a small army now to descend on St. Mary's or to find her and bring her home so the marriage will be consummated. And so what they do is they made a deal with, there's a Benedictine convent that is just a little ways from San Damiano, so the Benedictine sisters agree to hide her. So they get to the Benedictine convent. But then the brother or the uncle and his little army discovers that's where they are, and then they attack the convent, and something happened that they turn around and never come back again. And the legend is that, I forgot what the legend was, some miracle, they froze or something. But whatever, I mean, she stayed then in the Benedictine convent and was miserable there because convents and monasteries at this time were very hierarchical. They were very rich. They had wealth and land. And people did so many bad things in those days that they needed atonement for, and they would dish out their money to the monasteries and the convents to buy forgiveness. So they were flooded with money and wealth, and she couldn't wait to get out. So then the next in the movement then, shortly after Claire's sister escapes from her home and also finds her way to safety with her hair cut off. And So, is that an exciting story? And then the beautiful relationship they continue. Now, Claire's dream was to be a preaching sister, but that was impossible in those days, completely impossible. So she agrees to be cloistered for the rest of her life. And out of that begins the movement of the Sisters of Claire that still exist today. And in the novel, Frances and Claire had a respectable way of meeting often because they taught each other life and prayer and spirituality and politics and sharing and charismatic prayer in ecstasy together. And in the novel, it's interesting that the way they did it, that she would come to a window that had bars on it, and then when they were having prayer, their fingers would touch each other for the next years and years that go by. So we'll move on from there. Tomorrow, first of all, what a strong woman Claire was, that by the time, and especially after Francis' death, she had so won over the Pope and the Cardinals that she actually became their advisor, their political advisor, their theological advisor, their Bible teacher. Here is one woman that emerged out of a system that was just set against women, and she came out as one deeply respected and obeyed. Thank you, Jesus, for calling Claire. Great woman. Well, there, let's have a few minutes for just some of your responses or
how big questions. Did this order become at this time? Any idea?
How
big of an order did it
become? I'm just trying to remember, and then I'll include it in mistakes I made. But by the time of Francis' death, there were probably, this is a wild guess, I just read this but I forgot, between 10 and 20,000 Franciscans all over Europe, and then maybe half that number of poor Clares. And this was one of the greatest revival movements and reform movements in the history. And then Francis was the Franciscan brothers, and they weren't called that. He never wanted them to be named after him. But they were called the First Order, and then Claire and her sisters were the Second Order. And then the Third Order was lay people that still wanted the life of marriage and family, but made certain vows caring for the poor, nonviolence, and like that. So there would have been thousands of them, and there still are Third Order Franciscans all over the world. So that, yeah.
It seems to me that the spiriting away of Claire against the wishes of her father is kind of antithetical to never resist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like you made a special case.
That's an interesting, because her liberating herself from a situation of misery and not reaching her spiritual desires. Where I'd ask the question, did she do anything that was violent? I mean, physically.
So the never resist was...
That was for arms and fighting back and physically running someone out or hitting them or going to war. So from that definition, it was nonviolent. So. Yeah.
Time-wise, with Hildegard of Bingen, where are we?
Oh, where's Hildegard? I'll have to look that up.
I think
would you?
I'm thinking 1258 is a number in my head, but yeah. I think they're close in time.
Yeah, they would have been close.
She was an advisor to the Pope as well.
1258, Francis was dead. But would you look that up?
Sure.
Give an assignment. Anybody else want an assignment? If you'll be here tomorrow. Is that okay?
I'll be camping, but I'll be here later in the week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do First Order Franciscans today still go out to towns and preach in the streets and stuff like that, or live a more monastic life, or what?
That's where I'm, you know, I don't think they're ever cloistered in somebody that, is there any Roman Catholic?
I had priests, here? Franciscan priests, when I was a child in our church.
Yeah, so it's been mainly, I think, for the First Order is preaching and service to the poor.
The Franciscan Order in Rochester, Minnesota has co-joiners, which are people that are married or don't live in the community but are a part of it, and they refer to themselves as co-joiners. I don't know if that's the same as the Third Order.
I would guess it's in the line of the Third Order. Yeah. Are they married? They marry, have families.
Yeah.
Other? And my mind is blank. I'll just tell you where we'll go next time we're going to talk next time about Francis and creation and the animals, connection to animals and to nature, the sun, moon, and stars, and how that connects to environmentalism today. And that will, and then we'll have the story of the great one day when Saint Dominic met Saint Francis, and then the beginning of the missionary movement of the Franciscans. They made it all the way to Norway during Francis' life. So, and then later, Franciscans went all the way to Asia and to China, I think they did. So they were a missionary order, which you know very well if you've lived in California. So so we'll begin begin tomorrow, and I was going to close today with his prayer, but I'm not sure if I didn't put a bookmark. And does anybody have it in your billfold or purse? It's in the LBW. If you're a professional teacher, this would be called poor planning. Let us just give a thank you for Claire and Cece, and then we'll start with the prayer. Yeah. We give thanks to you, O God, through the Spirit, that you call these people of faith, gifted them, and through them brought the love of Jesus to so many people all the way up till today and in this place. We give our thanks in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Well, I guess tomorrow we meet at the time that it says on the bulletin board. See you tomorrow.